Welcome to Champions and Challengers, discussions on the legal edge of fintech with Greg Listini and others from Bricker & Eckler, a leading Midwest law firm with offices throughout Ohio and clients across the country, where we feature CEOs, founders, legal advisors, and industry professionals exploring business, technology, regulatory trends, and legal developments that are reshaping the financial services industry.
Welcome to Champions and Challengers, a FinTech Legal Review. I'm Greg Listini, an attorney practicing in the government relations and insurance regulatory spaces, and I also am pleased to lead our financial services and insurance industry groups here at Bricker & Eckler. Today, we are pleased to be joined by Jason Bennett and Marissa Buckley of Brilliantly. Brilliantly helps high-achieving software-as-a-service founders position their organization for A round, or that next big milestone, through scaling exceptionally happy customers. Well, hey, thank you both so much for joining us today on our, this is a maiden voyage for us, the first two-part series of our podcast we've done. So when Marissa and I talked earlier preparing for this, there was, I think, too many good things to talk about to fit it into just one episode. So I really appreciate you both joining us. And before we dive in, because I do want to have both of you introduce yourselves and then have a great discussion, but just to let the listeners know how we're going to split this up, we want part one to sort of talk about your company and talk about your experience in the insurtech space and sort of an overview of where you think insurtech is today. And then in part two, we're going to break it down maybe a little bit more and talk more specifically about some companies and some best practices that might be helpful for our listeners. So that's the general overview. And again, just thank you both so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, Greg. We're really excited.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, so you know, to kind of kick things off, and I don't know who wants to go first, but if maybe you could both introduce yourselves and then talk a little bit about Brilliantly, that would be a great way for us to get started. Marissa, do you want to go first?
Yeah, Jason? Marissa, why don't you go ahead and then I'll follow you.
Sure. So Marissa Buckley, I've been in insurance for 15 years. I worked for a startup property and casualty insurance carrier, regional based in Florida, and helped to grow that company to become the second largest in our market. We invested a lot in innovation over a five-year period. We were spending $20 million a year on innovation, and we developed several industry firsts. So we were one of the first insurance carriers to develop a technology infrastructure that would allow us to integrate and partner with insurtechs quickly and easily. So that gave us really an advantage in our market, helped us to grow our distribution, and also secure really wonderful partnerships with national providers who didn't want to underwrite the business in Florida, but wanted to offer other types of insurance. Left that career and moved to serve insurtech specifically. So Florida was hit with fraud pretty badly, and our innovation tech budget went in the tank as a result of that. Stayed with the company for a couple of years, but really my background in computer science and marketing, I knew that if I wasn't working heavily and deeply in technology, that I, you know, would lose my grip on where technology is heading and all everything that's emerging right now. So made that switch, and then met Jason in the process, which he can talk about, which is really, in my mind, it was now looking at how things have ironed out. It definitely was something that was meant to happen, and is just a fantastic relationship, fantastic convergence of our skills and backgrounds that allowed us to offer something pretty special to insurtech companies.
Great. Right. Thank you. Jason.
Yeah. Sure. Hey, I'm Jason Bennett. I'm an intrapreneur turned entrepreneur. I'm a product and revenue operations expert. I'm also a mentor to several startups, as well as I'm a mentor to a couple startup networks and foundations. You know, I bring with me nearly 20 years of experience in taking enterprise SaaS concepts to market, scaling, and exiting, and mostly from that leadership roles where implementing marketing ops, rev ops, product ops, you know, agile processes that really boosted growth for what we were doing, and then had the additional effect of rippling throughout organizations. So basically, we're taking agile and lean methodologies to really push out product and engage marketing and all the product teams, get everyone together. And that worked so well. I did it in one company and then went and did it in another. And that just seems to work. I do have a storied career in that, you know, I started with the big guys, IBM, spent some time with Microsoft, contracted by HP, but I really found that my passion is for the grind of startup and small companies. So after about 15 years of working within startups as a principal and so on and so forth, that's when I decided to branch out and be an entrepreneur. And I landed, where I landed in there was I was helping companies that were serving self-funded employers, usually mid-market or below. And that's what really started, and, you know, and the natural progression from there was I started meeting more and more insurtechs and insurance people in that realm. So I started gravitating towards that arena as my role as not only an entrepreneur, but an advisor, a consultant. And one thing I noticed consistently along the way is, you know, everybody knows, everyone hears all the buzz terms. It's growth and scale and agile and bah. Well, that memo isn't catching everybody because I just keep running into a lot of groups that either aren't aware, don't know how, they don't have the skill sets, or they're just so molded into traditional business ops or traditional marketing. Everything's in a bucket. We got silos, departmental, you know, barriers and all these things instead of just working together in the new realm. But, you know, in the startup world, that means a lot of failure right. Because you can't get out of the gate. So enter brilliantly. I just, you know, I really came up with the term one day. I'm like, you know, everyone keeps talking about growth, growth, growth. But I'm in the trenches with these guys in seed stage and growth stage startups. And growth is just so much more than marketing. There's so much more going on that have to, even if you've got a team of two, you still have to build a foundation around a growth mindset and the processes and systems and technologies that all join together. Like I said, even if it's two people or if it's 50, going from two to 50, tough. If you're just doing things because you heard it was a good way to do it, it doesn't really work. So I started brilliantly with the foundation of let's drop the fluff. Right? We don't need the fluff. We don't need 9 months, 3 months, 6 months to think of strategies. Why don't we just make some assumptions and go to market and just and figure it out? But at the same time, our model is to do exactly that and let the market deem and find those perfect customers, right? And then we transition into that more executive CGO, chief growth officer role. Now, that's been the model all along. Brilliantly was founded earlier in 2022. I've known Marissa at this time for about a year. And so we synced up and I said, hey, what are you doing? And she said, oh, right now, nothing. I said, well, good. Get over here and let's make this a thing. So on the notion that growth is so much more than marketing, we kind of relaunched the Brilliantly brand in about August, September timeframe of last year. And we've just been rocking and rolling ever since in the, and of course our niche is insurtech.
Yeah. So help maybe the listeners and me understand where you all auger into the process then, right? You talked a lot about sort of the different phases and what was it, maybe stages of grief of a startup, but you know, where are you best suited? Is it from day one, if you can get in there, or is there a sweet spot?
No, the sweet spot is, you know, to be clear, we're serving customers that are either They have a product, they're ready to go. They're just sitting there waiting. Maybe they don't know how to talk about it, position it in the market. But so we've got clients that are right there, and we've got clients with up to 10 million ARR, annual revenue, right? But our sweet spot is you've just launched, you probably raised a seed round, even if it's 500K, you've probably got that in your pocket and you need help finding what makes you unique and how to talk about your value over talking about the product. So our sweet spot is right there. I would call that that seed stage startup is when we like to get in there, because if things are going well and there's a good relationship, we intend to be there to get into a growth stage and get them ready for scale.
So I'll just add to that real quick. When I was working for a life insurance tech startup company when I met Jason, they had brought him on to come in to build a go-to-market strategy as an advisor. And so when I saw Jason's strategy, it was unlike any other strategy I've seen. It wasn't this comprehensive 40-page, you know, highly technical document. It was a really wonderfully well thought out strategy that honed in on key channels, messaging, and how to position the company uniquely, unlike competitors, that I could see, having been in the industry, was really going to work. So when talking with Jason and you think about traditional marketing and all of the effort that's involved with that, that InsurTechs typically will use in order to launch and get off the ground, that's an old school way of thinking, whereas Jason's agile go-to-market product allowed us, it's like so much value for both us brilliantly as a growth firm, but also for the InsurTech, because it's agile, it's small, it's a minimally viable funnel with key channels and rapid experiments that allows us at a low cost to figure out what works and what doesn't, and then scale that for the company. Our value, even though it's not a huge contract like some larger consulting firms might offer, for us, it allows us to get our foot in the door, meet these InsurTechs, evaluate them, and see if they are, you know, we've got some criteria that we need to match up on as well. Like, is the founder coachable and open to trying new things and differently? So we are able to get in there and make that assessment through that initial engagement. And at the same time, give the InsurTech a solid foundation without it being an exorbitant amount of money. So it's truly is a product market fit. When I think about the trends in InsurTech of vertical SaaS, when Jason said we found our niche, which is InsurTech, we're really practicing what we preach with that, not just targeting all startups, but specializing in saving InsurTechs, because so many of them fail for the wrong reasons. It's that they don't know their customer. Yeah. They didn't have a viable strategy. It's not because the technology wasn't fantastic or a product market fit. It's for other reasons that we believe we can help.
That's great. Can I ask a question to both of you? Same question in a different way. So Jason, you know, it sounded like you were not necessarily in the insurance space before this. And then Marissa, you were in more of the sort of incumbent insurance space, for lack of a better word. So for both of you, what has been sort of most remarkable about, you know, Jason coming into insurance generally and InsurTech specifically, and then Marissa, you making the sort of the switch over to working with these more, you know, startup type businesses?
So the carrier that I worked for was a startup carrier. So we were more nimble than an incumbent, but, and that really allowed us to get to the level of being the second largest in the market so quickly, because we were able to move so fast and we were able to secure those partnerships with national providers. But all the innovation involved with that, we built chatbot services. We were one of the first to build chatbot for claims and policy onboarding. And then we also were the first to develop a homeowners insurance mobile app. So we were partnering with InsurTechs way earlier on in like 2012, 2013, did a complete digital transformation and all that stuff. At the same time, like an incumbent, we had to do a complete system migration, a whole policy administration and claims administration, enterprise SaaS migration, which was probably the all-time career low for me, because that was the most difficult thing I ever had to go through. So I kind of have this weird background that allowed me to tap into InsurTech's innovation, but then also understand the challenges of that carriers are having with being able to leverage the value that of the technology InsurTechs bring to the industry. But we found ways to overcome that. Jason, with his background on just setting up revenue operations, building a startup company, and knowing the things that you need to focus on in order to do that, scaling that, how to scale, and knowing when to scale so that you don't scale too fast and kill your company, and then exiting, he has the capability to provide advice throughout funding, throughout the stages of growth for an InsurTech company. When we got together, and in addition to that, when Jason and I worked together for that life insurance tech company, we just gelled. It was like synergy, both very inspired after every conversation. Jason was great at this, at always contacting me, on a regular basis, just to check in and building that relationship. And after every conversation, it was always like, wow, that was an amazing conversation. We should probably work together. But when we finally got to that point, the really coming together with his background and the credibility that I'd built in the industry over the years, was just really, we saw the hardship that InsurTechs were going through. I can still, sometimes just attending industry conferences, looking at the brands, looking at how they're positioning themselves, the unique value proposition and all of this. It's and the solution for them is, $100,000 in a digital marketing agency or a brand firm that's going to help them with that, where we actually were able to take Jason's go-to-market plan and build that out to also provide agile visioning, UVP, messaging architecture to set them up with exactly the right things to say that's going to get them to the next level. So that's, people say things happen for a reason, and this couldn't be like one of the more glaring moments in my life where that's been true. And I feel so grateful and lucky, because it's not like we're both on the same page when it comes to how we serve InsurTechs. It's not about getting out there and generating a ton of revenue for ourselves. Like we have a founder's mindset at all times. So if something is challenging them, like we really carry that within our hearts and we want it to succeed. So it's just a nice way to work with other companies and do good in an industry that still needs some help. We're still not global innovation leaders like FinTech, but I think we're in the middle of an evolution where we're actually, I think of it as like connecting. InsurTechs are starting to connect with one another and deliver different tailored services. And then they're not trying to compete with incumbents or carriers. They're saying, we can actually help you modernize, even if you don't want to do a full conversion, like what I painstakingly had to go through. That they can actually, they've got technology that can now layer on top of what the carriers are struggling with, those legacy systems.
Yeah,
it's really a beautiful, it's a cool place to be in, because we're now like so flexible. Tech companies are so vertical focused, and just the partnerships and the ecosystem that's coming to life is fascinating to be a part of. And I've made a couple of those connections myself, where I had met an InsurTech that was doing something similar to another one, but separately, they weren't nearly as powerful as they would be together. So those are the things that are starting to take shape now in our market and the different communities that are developing.
Yeah.
So Greg, what she said.
Simple. That's simple. Well, Jason, I mean, I'm really curious to know from your lens, right, coming into this, you saw opportunity, but was there anything particularly about the either insurance or InsurTech specifically that, it could go either way. It could be really, really enticing or really scary, depending on what you saw, right?
No, we just bring it down to the bare bones of it. I'm a contrarian. And I like being a part of things that are, dispelling the traditional and the old school, right? So the insurtechs, just like fintech before them and other industries, you know, that buzzword or buzz term, digital transformation. But insurtech, when I really started taking a look at it, was at such an infancy level, even just a couple of years ago, that I thought this was really exciting. There's a lot of opportunity here because it's still that, like, insurance is just boring, right? And it's this, nobody wants to talk about it because it's just boring and it's just something you got to do.
You're really selling the podcast here, Jason. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to listen to it.
Except for what we're talking about.
They won't listen to us. But my point of that is I just saw, you know, I've been in health tech, I've also been in telco. I was in insurance in Europe. I lived in Ireland for a number of years. And I did work with some big insurance incumbent carriers over there. So it's not like I'm brand new to this industry. Like I said, as a contrarian, I see this, we're at the infancy of, now you've got insurtechs that are going to go up against these big incumbents in this huge, huge market. And what I look at when I see that is it's not just opportunity. That's just fun, right? Because you do have to break down barriers and you've got to make a difference and you have to be bold. Now, you know, I love the fintech market, big fan of it. And I think insurance and fintech will slowly and are as we speak. They're meshing, right? But it's that part of being an insurtech that, okay, we got to get out of this mindset and we've got to introduce something new because you know what? The consumer is expecting it. And so when you can go and disrupt, I'm all in. So yeah. That's kind of my motivation here.
So, you know, at its core, and this is mostly because this is what I know, you know, this is a legal podcast, right? And we talk a lot about sort of the legal side of the industry and what we're working on. It's a highly regulated industry. Yes. And, you know, what is it that you have seen when you're talking, you know, they talk a lot about sandboxes for regulators and being able to sort of play around with certain things on the insurtech space, but, you know, without sort of giving up any confidences, what are the big legal challenges that you're facing with the companies you're working with, or you're seeing with the companies you're working with?
That's a great question. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, without breaking confidences or just going into specifics, and again, bringing that just back to the bare bones of it, you know, we're selective on who we work with. That's number one. And we have that luxury, but we're selected because we want to be able to find a fit like everybody else, right? And part of that is talk to us about your experience in this industry. And if you don't have any, well, that's a risk. So how are you mitigating it? 9 times out of 10, there's no mitigation plan there. It's like, nope, we're going to jump in and we'll figure it out as we go. And we're like, we're not going to be a part of that because you need an attorney. So, you know, and you probably want to get in touch with this compliance officer and this compliance consultant because you're headed for trouble because you're kind of ignoring it. You're sweeping it under the carpet. So, and it's not uncommon that we run into that. I just want to say that, you know, up front.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to let Marissa answer. But that's my take on this is, what are you doing to de-risk that very thing, right? So whatever your vertical is, do you have a clear understanding of what regulatory, what compliance, what are the legal requirements coming into this? And a lot of times we're hearing, we got that in the bag. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, tell me about it. Well, you know, NDA. Okay, well, but you get the picture, right? So,
yeah.
That's a big concern, especially with guys coming. Final plug here, and then I'll hand it over to Marissa. But I always think it's good. I worked in health tech, for a while, especially in the self-funded space. It's always good to have a mesh of outside coming in with inside experts. That is the great combination because that's where that innovation happens, right? But when we run into the guys that they're coming from the inside without connecting on, or they're coming from the outside without connecting on the inside first and really looking at their roadmap and what they got to do on the legal front, that's just, you're setting yourself up for failure out of the gate. So that's my experience so far.
So at the same time, I want to say, you know, Jason said it's a luxury to be selective, or we're just crazy. No, but I agree with that. If somebody comes in and they're an insurtech and they don't have industry experience, part, we see that as well. And part of what we are doing is, and it's become really easy for us to do based on the great resignation in the fractional executive workspace, we're bringing in these C-level executives so we can advise companies on the industry, coach them into this new market and helping them to be successful. So that's a key piece of that. And Greg, that's where we could completely partner with your firm. That would be a wonderful thing we'd have to talk about with that.
Yeah, we always like the answer to call your lawyer. That's always, I like that advice. So.
But on the, for the highly regulated industry, so we have a client, Cogitate, and they offer an enterprise solution, a policy administration and claims solution, but it can be completely modularized. Now to the cool thing about this, their technology, is the low code, no code configurable environment that they have. So when you get regular, when you get changes and to be regular, you know, to be compliant with regulations, then you, this technology and platform allows a product manager at a carrier to go in and make changes on the fly and have them implemented. They have a test product, they have a test system, and then they can push to production, but it makes it easy for them to adjust their products and programs to remain compliant as well. So I see like technology like this, where they're making, where flexibility is just so key in enabling companies to be successful operating within a highly regulated industry, especially those that are even more regulated than others based on regions and things like that.
Yeah. So I think, Jason, you mentioned sort of some of the phases of what you do and moving into that chief growth officer position, I believe you said. Yeah. Can you just describe that a little bit and talk about what that means for the companies you're working with?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for asking that. It's, you know, it's one of those things where, again, I go back to that key. It's our slogan, right? Growth is so much more than marketing. You know, I can start the conversation with saying, if I'm a CMO, my, you know, my core metrics are revolving around conversion. Right. CGOs, their core metric revolves around revenue and growth, however you want to divvy that up. And to dig a little bit deeper into that, you know, and just give good old Brilliantly a little plug here, you know, we work off of some core tenets. And for anyone listening that knows anything about data science, you might hear some similarities. But if just to start to explain what CGO is versus the CMO realm, we always begin at the end, right? So what's the big picture? How are we aligning that back to what we're doing today? Any organization we go into, no matter the size, we're assessing the data. Where do you have a customer data platform? Do you even know what one is? Let's look at where your data points are and how equipped are you. A lot of times it's nil, right? There's nothing there, which is great. So we've got a, you know, clean slate. But it's our job to constantly be reviewing that, come back and say, well, this is how we're going to run this from a growth perspective, the full life cycle. I want to know where all that data is so I can make some much better decisions. Also, everyone on the same page. Growth officers are responsible for cross-functional, you know, removing cross-functional barriers, removing silos from your customer experience across the journey, right? And by the way, we're very marketing-centric. Marketing is such a big part of business. Of course we are. But getting everyone on the same page. When I say everyone, I pretty much mean any growth lever team, right? We get everyone on the same page, right? And also focus only on what drives value. You have to understand the essence of agile, lean growth and marketing and all that that entails, so that you constantly have a look at what are we doing right now and how important is that to what the metrics are and what we're accountable for this week, this month, next month. You know, very important. And we live by that fail fast mantra of just iterate fast, always be innovating, and never stop experimenting. You know, I will say the biggest scale ups out there, including insurtechs that are now at unicorn status, you know what they're doing? They have a dedicated teams that sit in the background and run experiments all day, all night, and experiments. No experiment lasts more than 2 weeks tops. Usually they're a couple hours or a couple days, and they vary from everything from, let's put the button on the left instead of the right and see what, because we believe the conversion will happen, will tick up 1 point. We're going to test that in 24 hours. And it could be much bigger effect, right? So my point is, when you think of growth, right, you've got to look at the holistic picture. Everything is marketing centric. You know, Peter Drucker even said it, right? 90% of business is marketing. 10% is innovation. Very true. But you still have all these different teams and everything. You've got to know your customers, build relationships with your customers. What's your social ROI? You know how important that is?
Right.
And for you to really believe it and embrace it in your culture. So as growth officers, we bring a different perspective. And that doesn't mean we get to come in and all of a sudden we run everything and everybody. That's not what we're looking to do. We're looking to build a very fluid and the most efficient means and use of people, technology, processes, and systems all across that journey that your customer's taking so they get the best experience. Final plug, find your perfect customers and have the systems and processes in place. Keep them exceptionally happy. You know who loves that? Investors. So there you go. That's what we do. Great.
You know, I'll just add to how valuable what Jason is saying about growth is, you know, oftentimes you'll go into a company, no matter what size they are, and you'll see these silos and people aren't really working together. There's this handoff from sales to marketing or from marketing to sales and then to customer success. And just all of these traditional things that can create some level of toxicity in a culture where with growth and the way that Jason was just talking about experiments, that actually creates a bridge across sales, marketing, and product and customer success and gets us all focused on the same thing. So we are instilling that within your organization, being open to allow that to happen, actually allows companies to develop a really wonderful cohesive culture where everybody's aligned and on the same page and they're not working on things they shouldn't be working on. They're truly got their hands on those growth levers, like what Jason was talking about. We have one client who has, you know, 35 years experience in claims specifically. She's built claims organizations and she's CEO of a TPA, Cassie Gallegos, and the TPA CCMS. She saw pain in the claim process and built her own technology company to overcome that specific vertical pain, which is field inspections and getting that data to carriers quickly. But at the heart of her organization is this growth mentality that she's instilled, and even working with her, she's so fast and agile. Her culture is so tightly knit and they operate so, there are no silos at all. It's like, you actually get to see that growth mindset in action with a company that is willing to be open and do those things like experimenting and relinquishing, this is a key piece too, the authority to a CGO who's an interim executive. That's not always easy to do when you've got a traditional mindset of, oh, you're going to do revenue operations and you're going to oversee the operations, especially when you're early stage and you know, you think about, oh, I got to have my hands on everything, which is fine. A founder could have their hands on everything, but we're there bridging everything together and are showing those results as quickly as possible so we can literally get this team running and operating on this revenue flywheel that allows us to get to where we need to be. But that comes with so many things, like you got to have the right founder mindset. You got to be open to things that are completely different than what you're used to, and a whole lot of experimentation. That's a lot of activity across your organization, but it's so worth it in the end.
That's a lot of trust that you all have to engender in the.
Well, you know what's interesting, Greg, is the reason that we develop, you know, kind of, you could even call it our own go-to-market, right? Is the agile go-to-market, where we come in for about 4 months, and we go build the trust during that, because we literally get you to market in 30 days. And then we spend another amount of time working really closely with you, building tech stacks and breaking them down. We get all these free tools and all this stuff. We very cohesive and collaborative manner of going out and validating your uniqueness, your product, and your perfect customers. And in doing that, that's where we build the trust. And that's where we share our experiences in this is growth versus us just sitting in the corner and getting you leads. And it's really, you want to talk product market fit? We got that, check, right? So it's working. And this is why, you know, discovery goes two ways, right? We want to know more about you than just a 15-minute call. Because are you ready for this? I mean, do you really want to take this on? Because sometimes it's not easy. You want to make people accountable? Holy crap. You know, a lot of people don't like to be held accountable, you know? So it's a back and forth, but you're absolutely right. It requires trust, because we're breaking the mold kind of thing, and, you know, changing things up. So
yeah,
that's how we establish that trust.
All right. So as part of our two-part series, then we're going to give a little teaser. You mentioned a couple companies that I think both of which you work with. Are there either those companies or others that are really doing things well? And then in part two, we're going to talk a little more in depth about how they're going about doing things well.
Okay. So, sure. I'll go ahead, Jason.
Is that a question?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you had
Grunge Gate. Informing me. So, okay. That's a question. What are they doing well? Marissa, jump right in there.
So I'll say, there are also like a couple other companies that we can talk about that are doing well that aren't clients of ours also. That's Steadily. So they're focused on landlord insurance, a severely underserved area in insurance. You know, working for a carrier that offered homeowners insurance, we had, you know, the dwelling fire landlord policies and things like that. But at that time, there were no companies that were specifically for landlord insurance. And this, because they're doing that, they're able to tailor their products and coverages for that specific market, which is allows for great innovation in that space. So that's one company. And then another one, Mini Pets. So they rebranded, they were bought by Mini, was the name of the brand. And now it's Mini Pets, and they, which is a much better brand name, because, you know, there are some attributes that you need to hit on to have a strong brand, and Bought by Mini doesn't really categorize who you are in the mind of the consumer very easily. Mini Pets, it's a better brand name. Their content is unbelievable. Probably one of the best content strategies I've seen. So those are two additional companies that are see the value of content, see the value of a niche vertical, and they're going for it with very specific innovation and technology. The two clients, Cogitate and Ion, CCMS, those two companies, and I want to mention this too about Ion with the changes in the Florida legislation that just happened in December, which was a major, creates a lot of new requirements on carriers to deliver information in a shorter period of time, where because these companies, you know, Ion, Cassie's, Insight Onsite Now, that technology of Field Insight was already in place before this change, but she knows what the pain points are. If you don't get that insight correct at the start of a claim, just how that affects the entire life cycle and all the things that can go wrong with that. But with the legislative changes in place, it's technology like that where carriers are required to submit information or do take action in a fraction of the time that they have to embrace to make that happen. And because they're focused on a niche vertical or a niche service like that, then that's how we're able to evolve the industry and win when those changes like that happen. It doesn't have to kill your company, which is carriers already suffering with all the insurance fraud and the expenses that they had to deal with that. So yes, it'd be great to talk about each of those.
All right, let's do it. So that's it for this episode. We're gonna wrap it up. Jason, Marissa, thank you so much for joining us. And I think that was a great teaser to get people to come back next time and listen to part two, where we dive into these companies a little more in depth. Thanks again.
Thank you, this is great.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Thank you for listening to Champions and Challengers, produced by Bricker & Eckler. Join Greg Listini and other Bricker attorneys for our next podcast covering the latest fintech-related legal topics.
The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not reflect the views of Bricker & Eckler. None of the content included in this podcast is intended to be legal advice and does not create or imply an attorney-client relationship.